All right. So good morning, everybody. Stephen Molyneux from Free Domain. Questions from freedomains.locals.com. And to the fellow who had the vivid dream about harming his daughter, I would really strongly suggest you get to a talk therapist. I really strongly urge you to do that. If you can't afford it, just contact me privately and I'll send you some money to go to therapy. But my guess would be that you had violent parents yourself. You're trying to be a peaceful parent, or you are being a peaceful parent. You say, of course, that you're not violent with your daughter when you are with her on a daily basis. So my guess would be that you have a violent parent yourself, or a parent with violent impulses, or maybe a parent who acted out violently, and that a parent is outraged that you are doing good in the world, and the impulses to violence are jumping from parent, your parent, to you. And that would be something to really keep an eye on. So again, I would strongly suggest get to therapy. If you can't afford it, just send me a message. We'll figure it out how you can get there. But that would be my suggestion there. Somebody stop me. And we've got, I've been talking online with this woman, 18 to 21. I'm 25 to 28 years old, to whom my online friend introduced me to for about 2 weeks now. We've covered such topics as children, how to raise them, public schools, marriage, divorce, mental health troubles, values, political views, hobbies, and interests, among other things. We've got plenty of commonalities, and we agree on basically all the major topics. You don't know that. You're just talking to someone online. So having healthy skepticism is important when dealing with people. There are a lot of people, I'm not saying this woman is one of them, but there are a lot of people who would try to manipulate you by agreeing with you. We both want children to get married and never divorce, raise happy, healthy children, etc. But then there's the big issue, which is distance. We live on almost the opposite sides of the globe. We haven't yet settled on a meeting, and she seems quite reluctant to do so, even if I were the one taking on the cost of that trip. So suspicions arise as to if she is who she says she is. Currently, she wants to wait 2 to 3 years before her first in-person meeting. She sent me a couple of photos of her, but none that prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that it is her. She hasn't agreed to a voice or video call with me either. It'd be great if she is real, but I'm afraid I'm just deluding myself. I'm rather torn on if I should focus more on looking for other women through friends, dating apps, social gatherings, etc., or simply focus on her. I wonder how long I should wait or push for a video call before abandoning all hope. Hope to hear back from you on this. Thanks for taking the time to read. Now, look, it's easy to mock, and you know, but don't. You know, I mean, this is obviously somebody who's very passionate about getting married and having children, and he's found someone on the other side of the world who claims to want the same things. Of course, you know, if it's like, well, we're going to have to wait 2 to 3 years before meeting, and there's no voice call and no video call. I mean, the most likely answer to this as to why she wants to wait before meeting is because she's overweight or something, like she needs to change something about her appearance and she's got a long way to go. That would be my guess. So, you know, as a male, you understand, like if you live in the West, you have the ticket to the West, which is, you know, pretty important for women around the world. You happen to have accidentally inherited something, which is citizenship in the West, which a lot of women want. And so you have this inheritance and you have a value to offer women around the world that you didn't earn and isn't native to you. And will, if it's a motivation, I'm not saying it is here, but just recognize that if you're some sort of passport bro or whatever, that you are strip mining the success of your ancestors in order to attract women who want access to those same resources. So that's not great, and it's not going to lead you to a good place. Now, no, she's absolutely not who she says she is. Like, there's no question of that. So if she sent you pictures and let's say she's attractive, then if she's really interested in you, then she would have a video call, right? Women are not shy about displaying their assets. I don't mean like TNA. I just mean like if she's pretty, then she'll have a call with you because that would further cement your attraction to her. So a woman who hides her face, who hides her voice is, you know, either not a woman or it's something else, or it's not who she says she is or not, and all of that, right? So the idea that you agree on things, but she won't agree to meet you for a couple of years, that's like you don't agree on the same things, because openness and transparency are important. And a voice call or a video call is essential for establishing trust over the anonymous, faceless channels of the internet. So if she won't have a voice or video call with you, you don't agree on the same things, because one of the foundational things that you would need in this kind of relationship is trust. I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a scam, because I guess you've offered to send her... Oh, no, you would take on the cost of the trip. So you wouldn't... Yeah, so she hasn't asked you for money. I guess you'd pay for that. So this is a dangerous situation. Honestly, I just want to be frank with you. This is a dangerous situation. It's dangerous in a couple of ways. The most important thing that I would tell you about, you know, this is, may sound like fatherly advice or something like that, but is that you have got to get your shit together in terms of self-protection online. Like, sorry, man, get your head out of your ass, shake it off. You have got to get your shit together when it comes to protection, self-protection online. There's a lot of scammers. There's a lot of skeevy, weird stuff out there on the internet, and you got to get your shit together. Are you literally, you've talked to this woman, or you've talked to this person, I assume, it's all been on text, it's been 2 weeks, and you want to spend thousands of dollars flying out to meet her after faceless, voiceless conversations over text for 2 weeks? Are you crazy? What are you doing? This is madness. Listen, I'm a big one for enthusiasm. I really am a big one for enthusiasm. But you've text chatted with this woman for 2 weeks, and you're offering to spend thousands of dollars to fly out and meet her. She says, we're not going to meet for a couple of years. She says, no voice chats, no video chats. Seriously, bro, get your shit together when it comes to self-protection on the internet. This is not good. And this speaks to a kind of loneliness and, frankly, a kind of desperation that is going to get you into serious trouble. So you have to find a way to deal with the isolation and the loneliness. And listen, you want to call in at freedomain.com. Call in at freedomain.com, brother. Send me a message. We'll talk. But you don't know anything about this woman. I mean, I'm fairly convinced she isn't AI, but, you know, maybe you meet her and there's a Newton handheld PDA on the desk or something, right? The big issue is distance. Okay, so what is the plan? Let's say that she is everything that she says she is. You have no way of verifying any of that. She's just typing, right? You say, I want a big family. Do you want a big family? Oh, yes, I want a big family. And then once she knows that you want a big family, she can talk about, she knows you're probably conservative, and she can just play it from there. I mean, I don't think she's scamming you. At least she's not asked for any money yet. But you rushing headlong into this and pair bonding with a freaking font is not good. You are in a situation of desperation. And in a situation of desperation, people make bad decisions. This is a bad decision. Now, the fact that you're eager to invest thousands of dollars and significant personal risk, I might add, you fly out to another country on the other side of the world to meet someone you've never met before, and they know that you're relatively wealthy. They know when you meet them that you have credit cards, you might have cash on you, or I don't know if people still use traveler's checks or whatever, but that's highly risky. It's a highly risky situation. And the fact that you're willing to display this level of, honestly, unbelievably dangerous enthusiasm for someone you've only typed with is going to signal you for mark. Maybe this woman isn't a scammer, but the next one might be, or the next one might be. And it might be even worse. Like, this is the kind of thing where you wake up in a foreign bathroom without a kidney. No, don't do it. Don't do it. I'm sure that the photo is pretty and so on, but if you can't even meet in person for a couple of years, you're going to be pushing 30. And then what? And then what? Let's say everything's the case. You talk with her for a couple of years. Eventually, you go out to meet her. Let's say she's everything that she says she is. Then what? So you're pushing 30, and you got to figure out how to make a relationship work from the other side of the world. Long-distance relationships are time-wasting garbage. You know, if you want to waste time, I guess you could put yourself in a coma. I'm joking, of course. You put yourself in a coma and wake up a couple of years later, you still aged, just lost a couple of years. The same thing with long-distance relationships. Long-distance relationships are time-wasting garbage. Solve the distance or don't bother. And you can't solve the distance here. I mean, if it's a long-distance relationship, I don't know, like Newfoundland to British Columbia or New York to Los Angeles. Okay, at least you're in the same country. At least you can legally get married without any hassles. But even those are mostly time-wasting garbage. There's no progress. You get horny. You meet up. You have a lot of sex. You go do cool places. But it's like having an affair. There's no reality. There's no normal mundane stuff of life. It's just all about sex and personal collision and fun stuff and eagerness and sorrow. And like, there's nothing real about it. So long distance relationships are where sperm and egg go to die. Because you can't make any progress. You can't break up. And the opportunity costs are enormous. Because here's the problem, man. Here's the problem. This is why you are in danger no matter what, right? I mean, there's a not outside chance that this is some kind of scam or that the woman is certainly not, she's certainly not who she says she is. I mean, without a doubt, right? She's certainly not the picture because she knows, as everyone does know, and she would have a certain level of self-protection as well. So she would know that the possibility that you would think she might be a scam would be very high. So if she cared about you or had any sense of reality, she would say to herself, well, gee, you know, I mean, I obviously I could be a scam. Some pretty girl on the other side of the world could be anybody. You know, it's like that old cartoon from the 90s. It's a dog typing says, well, on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. So she would want to work very hard to reassure you that she wasn't a scam. And she's not doing that. Well, why? Right? If she is thoughtful and caring and a good person to what raise kids and you know, mental health troubles, that's important as well. But if she cares about you, the first thing she'd want to do is establish herself as a real person with a voice and a video chat, right? That's the first thing she'd want to do is to reassure you she's a real person. Instead, she's saying we're going to wait for 2 to 3 years to even meet. And I assume that means wait 2 to 3 years. And there seems to be no schedule. Maybe it's 2 to 3 years to talk over the phone, to have a voice chat or a video chat, right? So the danger is, no matter what, even if she's 100% legit, well, then she doesn't understand how to protect you. She doesn't have empathy for your thoughts and feelings, right? I mean, she could be in prison and she's getting out in 2 to 3 years. She could be in a mental asylum and stuck there for a couple of years. Like, there could be any number of things, but I mean, come on, man. The problem is that out of desperation, your pair-bonding tentacles are latching onto this woman with the grip of a circus strongman. And what that means is that you're going to pair-bond with this text chatter, and you're going to start obsessing about her, and you're going to latch onto her, and you're going to waste a lot of time, and you don't have a lot of time to waste. If you're in your mid to late 20s, stop faffing around with text chats and find a real woman, local, to date. I mean, if you were 18, 20, whatever, right? I mean, it'd still be a waste of time, but at least you'd have some time to waste. You don't have time to waste. So you're going to latch onto this woman. She's going to, you're going to be, another problem with long-distance relationships is long-distance relationships, not that this is a relationship yet, there are havens for projection. You can project all of your dreams and ideals and perfections on the person because you don't have to deal with prosaic reality. It's all a fly-out, body collision, sex, and restaurant fest with no particular reality to it whatsoever. So you're gonna pair bond with this text message person. I mean, sounds like you're already doing it if you're willing to throw thousands of dollars at 2 weeks of texting. And the fact that she's still interested in you when you are throwing thousands of dollars at 2 weeks of texting, potentially go fly out, meet her, other side of the world, disrupt your life, get on a plane, fly for 14 hours, have a time change, go to a hotel, stay in a hotel, meet up with someone. Why? Because you texted for 2 weeks. If she had any sense of self-protection, she would stop texting with you and say, if you said, well, we've been texting for a couple of weeks, I've never talked to you, I've never seen you really, and so I'm going to fly out and spend time with you, she'd be like, whoa there, bucko. Like that you understand, this would be huge red flags for any mentally healthy woman. It's a huge red flag that you're willing to drop your whole life, fly all around the world for 2 weeks of texting. That's a lack of judgment. It's a lack of, I'm not saying you lack judgment as a whole. I'm just saying here, lack of judgment, lack of self-protection, lack of prioritization, lack of resource allocation that's intelligent. So you're going to pair bond with this fantasy. She certainly isn't who she says she is. Otherwise, she would verify it. And because she claims to be thoughtful and caring and you know, whatever, then the first thing she'd do is reassure you that she's real with a video chat, right? She'd be eager to prove that so that you wouldn't think she was potentially a scam. Right? So if she cared about you, she would do a video chat to put your mind at ease. But she is not giving a video chat, which means either she just plain isn't who she is, says she is, or she doesn't care about you enough to reassure your fears, concerns, legit concerns, right? And again, the temptation for mockery here, I sympathize. I really do. Like, obviously, you're lonely, you want to get married, and this is being held out. But what this is going to do is waste potentially years of your life and ungodly amounts of money. And it is going to render you undateable for years if you pursue this. You're setting yourself up for a huge failure and a huge waste of, you know, precious fertility years as a young man. And the woman in your life who might be a good woman in your life is going to sail past while you're busy typing with a potential sex worker on the other side of the world. The opportunity costs of pursuing this kind of thing, you're going to have to, sorry, man. My advice, pull your head out of your ass, shake it off. This is a hole with no bottom. It is a scam of some kind, right? It's not made a financial scam, but it's a scam of some kind. And she doesn't care about you, otherwise she'd reassure your concerns. Or she'd say, listen, if I'm unavailable to meet for a couple of years and I care about you, clearly you should go and find somebody else. She might be married, right? And maybe she is who she says she is. Maybe she's married, right? Maybe she's claiming something, but in a video chat, she might be revealed as grindingly poor in some backwater village in the middle of nowhere, which, you know, I mean, it's not her fault, and, you know, I sympathize with all of that, but as far as a marriage partner goes, probably not ideal. She also, you know, may not, it also maybe I need to learn how to speak English better. She might be using some kind of translator. Maybe she doesn't speak English well at all, or speak English at all. Maybe she's just running things through a translator, or that would probably show up. I don't know how good these things are, but probably show up. But no, bro, this is not it. Like, this is not the solution to your isolation. This is going to exacerbate your isolation. Because what's going to happen is you're going to pair bond, and you're going to dream and daydream, and it's all going to be perfect, and my life is solved, and I'm going to get married, and just woman's going to be wonderful. So you're going to stop looking for alternatives, and this isn't going to work out. And you're going to spend years and ungodly amounts of money on this, and then you're going to come out the other end bitter and angry and frustrated and mad at yourself and mad at everyone around you who didn't tell you the truth. And you then will be harder to date because you'll be bitter, suspicious, angry, and frustrated. No, don't do it. Don't do it. You got to get a grip. And again, great sympathies for the isolation and the loneliness that would lead you to this kind of stuff. But here's the other thing too. You got to think, look, this isn't going to work. I mean, this is not going to work. It's not even going to come close to working. It's going to be incredibly destructive, even if she is who she says she is, which she isn't because she won't validate it. Like, you understand, I really want to emphasize this point. You think she's a caring person, so either physically she isn't who she says she is, or emotionally she isn't, or both. Because if she's a caring person, she would be rushing to say, look, I understand, you know, I mean, this, you know, there's a lot of scams out there, and, you know, we're on the other side of the world. The first thing I want to do is reassure you that I am who I say I am. And so, absolutely, let's hop on a video chat to put your mind at ease because I care about you, right? She's not doing that, so, right? So, yeah, just she's not who she says she is. She's not who you believe she is. She's not who you fantasize she is because a caring person would validate who they were. The other thing, too, is I want you to think of, let's say you spend, minimum. Let's say you spend 6 months and you fantasize about her and you pair a bond with her and, you know, but then things don't work out for whatever reason, right? She won't talk to you. She won't have, you know, eventually at some point you wake up from the sexual lust phase and you're like, how the hell could I have ever believed that, right? Like, what was I, crazy? So then you're going to spend, you know, another 6 months recovering, getting your finances back in order, trying to recover the pieces of your heart that you scattered to the four oriental winds or whatever's going on. And then, let's say, a couple of months after that, you meet a woman, and she's like, hey, what's your dating history? He's like, oh, yeah, no, I got involved with a text-only chat with some woman who wouldn't agree to meet for a couple of years and wouldn't agree to a voice or video chat, and I spent thousands of dollars on this, and I really got my heart broken. So what is the woman going to think? Like, what is the new, quality, decent, local woman going to think when you unburden to her your history of falling in love with a font? She's going to think, this guy has the judgment of a soap dish. And look, I sympathize with it, and I'm just trying to give you this, maybe it's a sort of elder male protective sense of things, but you are also, like, this journey that you might be on is going to stamp you as crazy to other crazy people. And it's going to stamp you as unsuitable for sane, healthy people. This is what I mean when I say this is hugely dangerous. And now, this is early on, right? And what's happening, of course, there's a whole lot of stuff to untangle here, so I'll just be brief, but yeah, don't do it, because you either have to lie about it, and she may find out at one point or another. Some friend may mention something. She might find a text message or an email while she's looking for something else. So that's not good. So you either lie about it, which is going to make you emotionally distant, or you tell the truth about it, in which case a sane woman will run for the hills because she can't trust herself to somebody who makes these kinds of judgments. But the other thing, too, is you're going to have to go through, like, when this doesn't work out and is a disaster on every level, what's going to happen is you're going to end up mad at everyone in your life who didn't help protect you. Like, how did you end up in a situation where you're texting me? And I'm happy that you're texting me. I think it's a great thing. But obviously, a radically controversial philosopher in the middle of nowhere relative to you is kind of a last port of call. And I do know that people would rather talk about people in their lives they have established relationships with who care about them, about their problems, rather than talk to me. So I'm like the ER. I'm sort of aware of that. So you're talking to me because nobody else in your life is helping you or has credibility. That's another issue. If you're surrounded by people who aren't going to help pull your head out of your ass regarding this kind of stuff, then when the disasters happen, that's bad. Because why are you coming to me rather than talking to your father or maybe brothers or cousins or friends, or and why don't you listen to them, right? Why aren't they putting it in a way that helps you listen? So this is not a font on the other side of the world problem. This is an entire structural problem regarding your relationships. You have to find a way to get to better relationships so that you're not exposed, vulnerable, and potentially going to mess up your life in this way. So I hope that helps. And again, call in at freedomain.com if you'd like to help. All right, so Freedomain, I remember you saying something about a desert phase when we're transitioning from a dysfunctional life to a more virtuous one. I think I'm going through this phase right now. The old relationships are falling one by one, while I don't think I'm functional enough to find, attract, and keep good people around me. Have you found something similar? Any tips on how to deal with the loneliness? Well, it's not loneliness. It's not loneliness. I want you to think of if you are walking in some lonely place, and you see a funny-looking rock, and then you decide to excavate it, and you find a pretty statue from some ancient civilization, right? And you say, look, I've made a statue. Well, that would be an inaccurate statement. Oh, look, I've uncovered a statue is the accurate statement. You didn't make the statue, you just made it visible. It's not creating it, it's just revealing it. It's the same thing with loneliness. If you are in pretend relationships, which is just historically attached dysfunctional proximity, if this is the state of the relationships, and then you say, you know what, I'm not going to spend my life on trash planet, I'm going to head out for better people, I'm going to aim for better people. Well, are you suddenly becoming lonely after having all of these rich and wonderful and connected relationships? Well, of course not. So the reason you might abandon existing non-relationships in pursuit of real relationships is because you are lonely in your existing relationships. They're not real relationships. They are, in fact, blocking you from real relationships by giving you pretend relationships. In the same way that I assume heroin blocks you from self-knowledge by giving you the pretense of happiness rather than the real thing. If you're stuck in a room and you have a bunch of plastic fruit around you and, you know, you kind of eat it just out of habit, but it tastes bad, and then you're bored, you try another bite and so on. Well, you're not getting any nutrition. And you leave that room to get some food because there's no real food in the room and you're hungry. Now, when you're walking down the hall away from that room, do you say, oh my gosh, suddenly I'm really hungry? It's like, no, you left the room because there was just plastic fruit. You weren't getting any nutrition. You're hungry, so you're going in search of real food. You understand? You left the room because there was no food in it. You're looking for food, just plastic food. You left that room because there's no food in it. You're walking down the hallway. Oh my God, I'm hungry. No, walking down the hallway did not cause your hunger. You left the room with plastic food because you're hungry and you can't survive there. So don't blame the hallway. Don't blame the journey. Oh my gosh, you know, being philosophical is making me lonely. Nope. Searching for truth is making me lonely. Wanting genuine, real, honest relationships is making me lonely. Wanting people to care about me in my life when I've been surrounded for years or decades with people who don't care about me in my life, that's making me lonely. No. The people who don't care about you are making you lonely. You follow? Of course you follow. You guys are smart. Sorry. Insult to your intelligence. Of course you follow. So if you get lost in the woods and you wait for a day or two and then you're really seriously running out of food, at some point you're going to have to strike off in a direction. I assume, I know a lot of people say wait and stay where you are or whatever, but let's say for whatever reason you know no one's coming, so you start heading off, right? You got to strike out somewhere, because if you stay in the woods, you're going to die. It's got no food, right? Sorry, I know this is a really extreme scenario, but I really want to hammer the point home, right? So when you start walking, you're accepting that staying is going to get you killed. So you start walking in the direction of where you think a store, a town, a person, a hut, wherever you can get some food, right? So walking is accepting panic. Walking is accepting that staying is dying. Walking feels terrible because you're accepting that you have to try something or you're going to die. So when you wake up to the lack of connection, lack of love, lack of care in your relationships, when you wake up to that in the world, then you realize it's been plastic fruit and deep woods starvation your whole life. So the loneliness does not come from you becoming philosophical and looking for something better. The loneliness is what makes you do that, or what impels that. You know, I'm not looking for a wife. I'm not looking for another sexual partner. I'm not looking for romance. I'm not looking for love, because I already have that. And it's as good as it can be. I can't imagine better. I couldn't design better. So I have all that. So when you have something, you don't look. The reason you're going across the desert is because to stay is to die, or to recognize that the death you've been experiencing through isolation has already been happening. The loneliness you feel that is so intense when you start looking for better relationships or real relationships in your life, the loneliness that you feel is the result of history. It's not the result of the desert. You go to the desert because you die in the desert, right? You cross the desert. You try to find something outside of the desert because you wake up and what you thought was a town is in fact a desert full of sand people and dust. And you're like, whoa, I just woke up from a kind of drug trip or a delusion that I was among people. I'm in fact among dry simulacrum of real people in the shape of sand. I'm going to die here, so I've got to strike off to something better. You say, oh my gosh, I'm so thirsty. Well, you've woke up to your thirst. The thirst was not created by philosophy. The loneliness is not created by crossing the desert. Here we are piling up the analogies, but it's important. This is how our brain works at its deepest level. So you are awake to the isolation, to the lack of connection. And it is the loneliness in where you are that drives you across the desert. The desert does not create the loneliness. Because if you think the desert creates the loneliness, oh, I was in this wonderful, it was a good town. It wasn't great. It was decent enough. You know, it was okay. Then you cross the desert looking for something better. Then when the desert gets hard, what do? You go back. You go back. You go back to the sand people. Right? You go back to the sand people. Sure. Whereas if you know it's just dry, dusty, pretend people in some weird sculpted frieze in the desert, then that you won't be tempted to go back. Yes, I was crossing the desert, but the idea of going back was repulsive to me because back there was nothing, worse than nothing. It was the block to what was, right? So the way to deal with the loneliness, and the loneliness is like a curse inflicted by those who want to manipulate and control you through isolation and distance. The loneliness is a curse put on you by dysfunctional people so that you'll collapse your standards and come back to them because they collapsed their standards and stayed in isolated, manipulated, false, lying, trash planet. So it's just a curse. It's just a curse put on you. So when you wake up to the fact that dysfunctional people don't have anything positive to offer you, they immediately pivot to abuse and loneliness. Oh, you're just drifting away from everyone. You're just so isolated. You'll never have any friends with anyone. You're too ideological. You're too abstract. Right? This is terrible. Like, loneliness is just a curse put on you by people who have nothing to offer you except removing the curse. Right? Like the guy who breaks your leg will dangle a crutch in front of you, right? Look, I have something of value to offer you. It's like, well, only because you broke my leg, right? So, all right. Let's do one more quickly. Hopefully this helps, y'all. Social media marketing seems to have me in a chokehold, particularly when it comes to expensive toys for kids. I see these influencers with beautiful playrooms for their children, undoubtedly thousands of dollars of items, and I feel a massive fear of missing out, almost as if I'm depriving my daughters of the magic of childhood if I don't drop serious loot on these products. If I think rationally, I know my daughter is perfectly content collecting rocks and just interacting with her environment or me. So why do we feel so inadequate compared to these Instagram moms? I know it's fake. I know it's selling me on a product. Why can't I resist the urge to spend? Right. So I'll tell you a big secret about children's toys. Children's toys, it's father absence. And you'll notice as father absence has increased, children's toys and the addiction to children's toys has also increased. So let's say you make $25 an hour and there's a toy that costs $50. That's 2 hours you can't spend with your family because you're making that money. So shiny toys are absent fathers. Yes, I know sometimes it's the woman, but we'll just talk in general, right? Like the 95% of the situation. We can handle the odds. We really can. So when you look at a room full of toys, I see a father who has to work to pay for them. So the presence of toys is the absence of the father. And this was true even when the toys were handmade. Usually it's men who are making the toys. The presence of toys is the absence of the father. And as fathers have left the home, children have been bribed with toys. So you're part of a general social trend, which is to replace people with objects. So family bonds and parental bonds and child bonds are weakened so that we're easier to push around, control, and manipulate. I mean, I remember as a young man, there were these crazy, like hysterical waves of gotta have it's with kids. There was like, gosh, what were they? Cabbage Patch dolls, Tickle Me Elmo. There were Beanie Babies. There were, you know, and now there's Pokemon stuff and I'm, you know, Dragon Ball and, you know, all this crazy stuff. And what is it? Well, it's obviously the transfer of money. And it is fathers absent from the family to pay for, you know, bullshit shiny trinkets that are meaningless. And they're saying, for your children to be happy, you have to go to work. You have to give them stuff that represents the time you didn't spend with them. I mean, people were paying these absurd amounts of money, you know, hundreds of dollars or sometimes even more for these ridiculous toys. Oh, it's a Cabbage Patch Kid. It's like a manufactured hysteria, like sort of tulip mania, right? It's a manufactured hysteria. And of course, it's a form of money transfer. It's a form of manipulation. And it's a way of bribing children with father absence so they place more value on things than people. And if you can get people to place more value on things than people, then you can make a lot of money. Society gets really destabilized. Family bonds are weakened. And children, like removing children from the home, is the foundational mission of everybody who wants to prey on children, right? Which is why taking children to daycare, taking children to kindergarten, taking children to school is not so much about the presence of propaganda, it's about the absence of fathers. And the reason I say the absence of fathers or the absence of males is that, I mean, I worked in daycares. So I was like the only male for, you know, it felt like thousands of miles around. So the purpose of society, when it wishes to gain more control, the purpose of politics, when they wish to gain more control over the citizenry, is to remove fathers from the home or to remove males from the children's environment. And, you know, the rise of woke culture, it's just the rise of unrestrained female nature. Unrestrained being it's not balanced by the masculine, right? I mean, the masculine unbalanced by the feminine is not ideal, and the feminine unbalanced by the masculine is not ideal. We're a team. We're supposed to work together. But, you know, the tone police and this bizarre human resources psychology, like every male space, the women demand to come in and then they start tone policing and snapping at people, and you get this whole HR mentality. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, there are these memes like, oh, when you've told a joke so good at work that HR wants to hear it, you know, there's this kind of fear, right, about this kind of power that is censorious and tone policing and all about aggressive feelings rather than objective reality. So the urge to spend, yeah, I mean, I get it. You have been programmed, and we all are. I say this with great sympathy, and I'm certainly not above or immune to it, but you have been programmed to think that love means not being there. And of course, to some degree for men, that's true, right? A woman serves the home by being there. A man serves the home by being away, right? Going to get hunter resources or whatever, gathering, or having a job or whatever. So you have been, like, so women are programmed to take care of children to the point where this becomes obsessive reality shielding helicopter parenting that stifles children and makes them soft, flaccid, fat, uncompetitive, and resentful. You know, people think, oh, the video games is like, it's a problem with the kids. No, in general, it's a problem with the parents. Hey, if you're home playing video games, I know you're safe, right? So women's desire to keep men safe is supposed to be balanced by men's desire to expose them to risk, right? You know, that old meme of the woman throwing up the toddler on the beach. You know, what's actually happening is the toddler's going up 1 or 2 feet. What the toddler feels is going up 5 or 7 feet, and what the wife sees is the toddler going up like 20 feet, right? Because she's a very strong sense of danger, and that's great. You know, I mean, you wouldn't want toddlers to be raised by only men because they'd be exposed to a little bit too much risk and indifference, right? But excessive child-proofing is adult-proofing. Like, you don't get to adulthood because you don't know how to manage risk. And because you don't know how to manage risk, you're easily programmed, right? When you don't know how to manage risk, when you've not grown up learning how to manage risk, and that's one of the most essential things that all living organisms with higher functions need to do, is to learn how to manage risk. But when you don't know how to manage risk, you can be told that things are risky and you don't have any sense of proportion. So-and-so is a threat to our democracy. And you go, ooh, this is scary, right? Excessive CO2, plant food is a threat to the survival of the planet. Like, you don't have any way of gauging threats because you haven't been out there exploring the world, making mistakes and getting your strawberry knees and learning how to balance risk and reward. So the video game thing has a lot to do with fearful moms and lower social trust and all of that. But yeah, fearful moms preferring their kids be home so they know they're safe. But the kids aren't safe because they're not out there learning how to manage risk. So their excessive safety is the greatest risk of all. We know that from the Utopia, Mouse Utopia experiments and from looking out the window. So yeah, selling a product, absolutely. And of course, it's easier to buy your kids something sometimes than to engage them in some cool imaginative play. Like, it's a lot of work to create, you know, we're going to take this cardboard box and pretend we're going to Mars, you know? If you're not used to play and all of that, it can be a lot of work. And rather than relate to each other, you would try sometimes to relate through toys, right? And, you know, learning to play and all of that's fine. But rather than having a conversation or do some mutual imaginative play that bonds you, it can be, let's roll the dice on a Monopoly board. And that's our structured time together. And again, I'm not saying there's anything bad. I played board games with my daughter, but, you know, you need to balance it with the actual connection stuff. So what I would do if I were in your shoes is I would look back at your own childhood and say, did your parents buy you stuff rather than spend time with you, right? Which transfers children's allegiance to the media and transfers money from the family to the makers of toys. So everybody benefits except you and your kids. So did you have a situation where your parents were like, well, you know, we put a roof over your head, we bought you all these things, we took you on vacations, you had a new bike every year, and that's our value. Like, no, it's not. No, it's not. And of course, it's a way of programming people to think that, well, the government has real value because it gives you stuff. Well, your parents have real value because they gave you stuff, but everything they gave you was time they were away from you. And they chose that time away from you and gave you stuff for reasons other than affection. Now, of course, you understand, I'm not talking about two extremes here. So I'm not saying never buy your children toys. You understand that, right? You follow that, right? But the toys that you buy your child should in general be something that you can play together and connect with, right? So my daughter was really into amphibians. So, you know, sometimes she bought these little plastic tubes of like lizards and frogs and so on, and we would play with them together. So the toys are something that, and sometimes you would play with them alone, but the toys in general were ways in which we could connect. So of course I'm not saying, but you know, you see this, that it's crazy just how, like, you go to kids' birthday parties and it's just this massive cavalcade of toys that the kid's never going to play with, really. There's no way to differentiate or focus on that, and there's so many toys, and it's parental absence, it's adult absence every single time. All right. Well, I hope that this helps, and thank you everyone so much for these great questions. Love you guys to death, and freedomain.com/donate. If you'd like to help out the show, really, really would appreciate it. freedomain.com/donate. Lots of love from up here, my friends. I will talk to you soon. Bye.